Chapter 62. Well, Thomason, perhaps I don't know all the particulars of my mother's wish, so you had better use your own discretion. You will always feel that I slighted your mother's memory. No, I will not. I shall think you are convinced that, had she seen Diggory in his present position, she would have considered him a fitting husband for you. Now, that's my real feeling. Don't consult me anymore, but do as you like, Thomason. I shall be content. It is to be supposed that Thomason was convinced, for a few days after this, when Clem strayed into a part of the heath that he had not lately visited, Humphrey, who was at work there, said to him, "I am glad to see that Mrs. Wildevant Venn have made it up again, seemingly." "Have they?" said Clem abstractedly. "Yes. And he do contrive to stumble upon her whenever she walks out on fine days with the chill. But, Mr. Yeobright, I can't help feeling that your cousin ought to have married you. 'Tis a pity to make two chimney corners where there need be only one. You could get her away from him now, 'tis my belief, if you were only to set about it. How can I have the conscience to marry after having driven two women to their deaths? Don't think such a thing, Humphrey. After my experience, I should consider it too much of a burlesque to go to church and take a wife. In the words of Job, I have made a covenant with mine eyes. When then should I think upon a maid? Apostrophe, no, Mr. Clem, don't fancy that about driving two women to their deaths. You shouldn't say it." "Well, we'll leave that out," said Eobright. "But anyhow, God has set a mark upon me which wouldn't look well in a love-making scene. I have two ideas in my head, and no others. I am going to keep a night school, and I am going to turn preacher. What have you got to say to that, Humphrey?"
"I'll come and hear ye with all my heart. Thanks. 'Tis all I wish." As Clem descended into the valley, Thomason came down by the other path and met him at the gate.
"What do you think I have to tell you, Clem?" she said, looking archly over her shoulder at him.
"I can guess," he replied.
She scrutinized his face. "Yes, you guess right. It is going to be after all. He thinks I may as well make up my mind, and I have got to think so too. It is to be on the 25th of next month, if you don't object."
"Do what you think right, dear. I am only too glad that you see your way clear to happiness again. My sex owes you every amends for the treatment you received in days gone by." The writer may state here that the original conception of the story did not design a marriage between Thomason and Venn. He was to have retained his isolated and weird character to the last, and to have disappeared mysteriously from the heath, nobody knowing whither, Thomason remaining a widow. But certain circumstances of serial publication led to a change of intent. Readers can therefore choose between the endings, and those with an austere artistic code can assume the more consistent conclusion to be the true one. For cheerfulness again asserts itself at Bloom's End, and Clem finds his vocation. Anybody who had passed through Bloom's End about 11 o'clock on the morning fixed for the wedding would have found that, while Eobright's house was comparatively quiet, sounds denoting great activity came from the dwelling of his nearest neighbor, Timothy Fairway. It was chiefly a noise of feet, briskly crunching hither and thither over the sanded floor within. One man only was visible outside, and he seemed to be later at an appointment than he had intended to be, for he hastened up to the door, lifted the latch, and walked in without ceremony. The scene within was not quite the customary one. Standing about the room was the little knot of men who formed the chief part of the Egdon coterie, there being present Fairway himself, Grandfer Cantle, Humphrey, Christian, and one or two turf cutters. It was a warm day, and the men were as a matter of course in their shirt sleeves, except Christian, who had always a nervous fear of parting with a scrap of his clothing when in anybody's house but his own. Across the stout oak table in the middle of the room was thrown a mass of striped linen, which Grandfather Candle held down on one side, and Humphrey on the other, while Fareway rubbed its surface with a yellow lump, his face being damp and creased with the effort of the labor. "Waxing a bed tick, souls?" said the newcomer. "Yes, Sam," said Grandfather Candle, as a man too busy to waste words. "All I stretch this corner a shade tighter, Timothy?" Fareway replied, and the waxing went on with unabated vigor. "'Tis going to be a good bed, by the look of it," continued Sam, after an interval of silence. "Oh, may it be for? 'Tis a present for the new folks that's going to set up housekeeping," said Christian, who stood helpless and overcome by the majesty of the proceedings. "Ah, to be sure, and a valuable one, I believe. Beds be dear to folks that don't keep peace, bain't they, Mr. Fareway?" said Christian, as to an omniscient being. "Yes," said the furs dealer, standing up, giving his forehead a thorough mopping, and handing the beeswax to Humphrey, who succeeded at the rubbing forthwith. Not that this couple be in want of one, but 'twas well to show 'em a bit of friendliness at this great racketing vagary of their lives. I set up both my own daughters in one when they was married, and there have been feathers enough for another in the house the last 12 months. Now then, neighbors, I think we have laid on enough wax. Grandfather Candle, you turn the tick the right way outwards, and then I'll begin to shake in the feathers." When the bed was in proper trim Fareway, and Christian brought forward vast paper bags, stuffed to the full, but light as balloons, and began to turn the contents of each into the receptacle just prepared. As bag after bag was emptied, airy tufts of down and feathers floated about the room in increasing quantity till, through a mishap of Christian's, who shook the contents of one bag outside the tick, the atmosphere of the room became dense with gigantic flakes, which descended upon the workers like a windless snowstorm. "I never saw such a clumsy chap as you, Christian," said Grandfather Candle severely. "Who might have been the son of a man that's never been outside Bloom's End in his life for all the wit you have? Really, all the soldiering and smartness in the world in the father seems to count for nothing in forming the nater of the son. As far as that chief Christian is concerned, I might as well have stayed at home and seen nothing, like all the rest of ye here. Though, as far as myself is concerned, a dashing spirit is counted for somat, to be sure. Don't ye let me down so, father. I feel no bigger than a ninepin after it. I've made but a bruckle hit, I'm afeard. Come, come. Never pitch yourself in such a low key as that, Christian. You should try more," said Fareway. "Yes, you should try more," echoed the grandfather with insistence, as if he had been the first to make the suggestion. "En common conscience, every man ought either to marry or go for a soldier. 'Tis a scandal to the nation to do neither one nor t'other. I did both, thank God. Neither to raise men nor to lay 'em low, that shows a poor do-nothing spirit indeed. I never had the nerve to stand fire," faltered Christian. "But as to marrying, I own I've asked here and there, though without much fruit from it. Yes, there's some house or other that might have had a man for a master such as he is that's now ruled by a woman alone. Still, it might have been awkward if I had found her. For, d'ye see, neighbors, there'd have been nobody left at home to keep down father's spirits to the decent pitch that becomes a old man. And you've your work cut out to do that, my son," said Grandfather Candle smartly. "Wish that the dread of infirmities was not so strong in me. I'd start the very first thing tomorrow to see the world over again. But 71, though nothing at home, is a high figure for a rover. 71, last Candlemas day. Gad, I'd sooner have it in guineas than in years." And the old man sighed. "Don't you be mournful, Grandfather," said Fareway. "MPT some more feathers into the bed tick, and keep up your heart. Though rather lean in the stocks, you be a green-leaved old man still. There's time enough left to ye, yet to fill whole chronicles. Begad, I'll go to 'em, Timothy to the married pair, said Granfer Candle in an encouraged voice, and starting round briskly. I'll go to 'em tonight, and sing a wedding song, hey? 'Tis like me to do so, you know, and they'd see it as such. My down in Cupid's Gardens was well liked in four. Still, I've got others as good, and even better. What do you say to my, she cal led to her love from the lattice above, oh come in from the fog jai do. ' twould please 'em well at such a time. Really, now I come to think of it, I haven't turned my tongue in my head to the shape of a real good song since old Midsummer Night, when we had the barley mow at the woman, and 'tis a pity, to neglect your strong point, where there's few that have the compass for such things. So 'tis, said Fairway. I'll guy the bed a shakedown. We've put in 70 pounds of best feathers, and I think that's as many as the tick will fairly hold. A bit and a drap wouldn't be amiss now, I reckon. Christian, maul down the victuals from corner cupboard if canst reach, man, and I'll draw a drap o' some mat to wet it with. They sat down to a lunch in the midst of their work, feathers around, above, and below them, the original owners of which occasionally came to the open door, and cackled begrudgingly at sight of such a quantity of their old clothes. Upon my soul I shall be shocked, said Fairway when, having extracted a feather from his mouth, he found several others floating on the mug as it was handed round. I've swallowed several, and one had a tolerable quill, said Sam placidly from the corner. Hullo, what's that wheels I hear coming? Granfer Candle exclaimed, jumping up and hastening to the door. Hi, 'tis they back again, I didn't expect 'em, yet this half hour. To be sure, how quick marrying can be done, when you are in the mind for it. Oh yes, it can soon be done, said Fairway, as if something should be added to make the statement complete. He arose and followed the Granfer, and the rest also went to the door. In a moment an open fly was driven past, in which sat Ven and Mrs. Ven, Yeobright, and a grand relative of Ven's who had come from Budmouth for the occasion. The fly had been hired at the nearest town, regardless of distance and cost, there being nothing on Egdon Heath, in Venn's opinion, dignified enough for such an event, when such a woman as Thomason was the bride, and the church was too remote for a walking bridal party. As the fly passed the group which had run out from the homestead, they shouted, "Urra!" and waved their hands, feathers and down floating from their hair, their sleeves, and the folds of their garments at every motion, and Granfer Candle seals dancing merrily in the sunlight as he twirled himself about. The driver of the fly turned a supercilious gaze upon them. He even treated the wedded pair themselves with something like condescension. For in what other state than heathen could people, rich or poor, exist who were doomed to abide in such a world's end as Egdon? Thomason showed no such superiority to the group at the door, fluttering her hand as quickly as a bird's wing towards them, and asking Diggory, with tears in her eyes, if they ought not to alight and speak to these kind neighbors. Ven, however, suggested that, as they were all coming to the house in the evening, this was hardly necessary. After this excitement, the saluting party returned to their occupation, and the stuffing and sewing were soon afterwards finished, when Fairway harnessed a horse, wrapped up the cumbrous present, and drove off with it in the cart to Venn's house at Stickleford. Yeobright, having filled the office at the wedding service which naturally fell to his hands, and afterwards returned to the house with the husband and wife, was indisposed to take part in the feasting and dancing that wound up the evening. Thomason was disappointed. I wish I could be there without dashing your spirits, he said. But I might be too much like the skull at the banquet. No, no. Well, dear, apart from that, if you would excuse me, I should be glad. I know it seems unkind, but, dear Thomason. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.